What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of Teeing It Up with CNV, the number one sports podcast in the Southeast Metro Detroit region. I'm your host, the C himself, Connor. As always, on a fine Tuesday night of recording with my co-host, the V, Vladimir. What is going on, man? How are you recovering from what was March Madness and one of the greatest sports weekends of the year?
It really wasn't even one of the greatest sports weekends of the year. We'll get into the actual action, but I'm doing well. Michigan State did not disappoint us. They did not send us into a booze-fueled rage fest or anything. They tried to in the first halves, a couple of slow starts. Again, we'll get into that, but it was a good time. Obviously, we were there. I actually had a lot of fun with the people who were there. As Cleveland is a city, don't need to ever go back. That Friday game that we went to, I was a little bit of a celebrity there with my Tom Izzo sweatshirt.
Yeah, you were.
It started even checking into the hotel. I saw people kind of giving it the side eye. A couple people said, "Oh, hey, nice sweatshirt, nice sweatshirt." A couple of random kind of adults asked to take pictures of the sweatshirt, which that was a little weird to me because I was like, "Are you taking a picture of me? You taking a picture of the three faces of Izzo? Do I got a smile in this?" So I just kind of stood like it was a mugshot. And just like, I don't even know if I was captured. I was just like, please let this end. And so that was entertaining, but a lot of people were fans of it. I've loved this sweatshirt. I got it in 2020 on Cassius Winston senior night. It was pretty much the last sporting event before COVID shut the world down. And I've had it ever since. It's a pretty fun sweatshirt. Don't get me wrong. It was really interesting to see how many people just don't see anything like this, how unique it is, how much fun it was. How are you?
Yeah, maybe it's because I like don't see it, or I sorry, the other way around. I see you wear it so often that I like didn't think twice about it, like at this point at least. But it is like I was impressed. You were a bit of a local celebrity in Cleveland, and there weren't too many. There was I a contributing factor might have been that there wasn't much else to look at in the city of Cleveland. Granted, the time of year and kind of, I'm sure we didn't get to every corner of the city. But anyways, we're gonna talk about March Madness. This is gonna be another purely March Madness show. What went down? Like Vladdy said, there weren't a ton of surprises this year, and you kind of implied it was a bad March Madness. Well, it might not have had its moments. I think it sets itself up for some great matchups moving forward. And it's still the greatest sports weekend of the year because you just get an excuse to have your eyes stare at television and a ball go in a hoop for 4 days straight. And that's what I did. That I actually genuinely, I wasn't like, it wasn't even a hangover. It was like I had almost like this hole in me Monday morning that I was just like, I'm not just going to go sit down and watch basketball for an extended period of time today. That's all I've done for the last 4 days. So I definitely had that, but we'll get into March Madness. We'll get to Michigan State as they kind of come up. They'll be a little early on in the bracket. I guess I'll start with the biggest storyline. Like you said, not much going on as far as the first round. It's the first time the 1 through 4 seeds all made it, and I think it was like 12 years. It's only the fifth time since the 1980 something. So pretty rare and cool there. It made it seem like the women's tournament where. I don't think a 1, 2, or 3 has ever lost in the women's tournament. Is that correct? Anyways, I don't think a one. I think it's a 1, 2, or there's never been higher than like a 4 seed in the final four or something like that. But anyways, let's talk about the games right at the top. The first quad, Auburn, Creighton, Mich. Sorry, that's the second round. Auburn, Alabama State, Louisville, Creighton. Thoughts on that kind of quad. Auburn comes out after Creighton beats Louisville, and then Auburn beats Alabama State, and then Auburn pulls away against Creighton in the end.
No, not really. I guess maybe Creighton showed us why Louisville was considered an 8 seed and kind of handled them. I know
Yeah.
we were sitting there watching that game together. Kalkbrenner, who was supposed to be the rising star of the evening, turned out to kind of be the worst player on the floor, but it didn't matter because they had that little 5'11" point guard who made everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it. I'm not even going to talk about a 1 versus 16 matchup.
Yeah. I guess with this quad in general, and Louisville, and then we'll get to Clemson in a second, but they showed why they were underseeded and how bad the ACC was. They were kind of the only two teams I gave a chance in the ACC, and they both disappointed. The game against Creighton was never really competitive. And then from an Auburn standpoint, a couple of minutes in that 116 seed where they looked like they weren't going to get it, and a good stretch of the Creighton game where it looked like I think Creighton was up at the half, or was only a 2 or 3 point game at the half, and they were able to kind of flex their muscles in the second half. I think they're fine. Like, it's one of those things where people are going to talk about the three out of the four losses to end the season. I think the rust is gone. I think they're ready to play. And it'll be, we'll get into it with the next kind of quad here, but it'll be an interesting matchup for them against Michigan. So the next kind of quad was Michigan and UC San Diego, and then Texas and Yale. Sorry, Texas A&M and Yale. Michigan with the close 68-65 win against UC San Diego, just barely covering, just barely beating what everyone has as their top upset. I guess good on UC San Diego for coming back. They kind of had a ultimate brain fart in the last, 10 seconds, 15 seconds of the game there. After coming all the way back, I think they were down by 12 at half. And then another one, Yale battled, never really was truly in that game. But I think that's a good Texas A&M team. And then that moved on to the Michigan A&M matchup, which score be gone was one of the more entertaining games of the second round. And the fact that Michigan came all the way back from down in the double digits to come and kind of just went on a can't miss run. Michigan's guards, something that they haven't really done well all year, is play well at the right time. And that's complementing their two best assets. And that's 7 footers, which not a lot of teams have. But again, they're going to be met with the ultimate task in Jahni Broome. I don't know. Thoughts on the games I kind of just went through there.
I mean, I'll just say Michigan played clean. That was kind of what they needed to do if they wanted to advance the UC San Diego game and then the Texas A&M game as well. They did that. I guess kudos to them. They'll set themselves up for a matchup against a team that they probably shouldn't be able to beat. But like you say, if Mr. Gale is going to take the blindfold off and play like a human being and compliment 2 7-footers, which, as you might imply when you say 2 7-footers are a matchup nightmare for anyone, especially when one of them is somewhat of a ball handler. I mean, yes, Danny Wolf does play point center at times, but he also does turn it over for
A
fun.
ton.
So Michigan, if once again, if they continue to play clean, this Auburn team you mentioned with Alabama State and then Creighton, they've started slow, but they've knocked off the rust in both games so far in the tournament. They'll be pretty much at home. The drive from Auburn is a lot closer than the flight from Detroit down in Atlanta, so they'll have the crowd there against Michigan. But yeah, just kudos to them for getting out of that quad. I don't think many people had them doing that.
No, and I think they're going to be a tough matchup for even Auburn. The way they're playing, and you mentioned it, not turning the ball over, I think they can beat this Auburn team. But by a law of averages, they go back to anything close to that, they're just not going to be able to handle how good this Auburn team is. Moving on to the rest of the region, Ole Miss. I mean, North Carolina had a nice comeback, but Ole Miss, I'm going to say this and we'll get to the matchup, is for me one of the toughest outs in this tournament. And they've looked like one of the best teams in this tournament. Say what you want about North Carolina, Ole Miss came out and absolutely
Them.
dominated them,
Yeah,
quite
I mean, yeah,
frankly.
that scoreboard is fake. That was not a 7-point game. That's a lot of those games that were massive blowouts on Thursday and Friday that pretended to look respectable just because teams stopped trying, don't tell the full
Right.
story. You're right. They're a deep team. They've got that crispier defensive identity. They throw bodies, looks at you, and you kind of turn it over to them at will. And it should be a pretty good matchup. I guess I was a little disappointed about Iowa State's performance in that second round. I had them in the Elite Eight, so that always sucks when you can get something that wrong. But
And I
Credit
have
to
Ole
Ole
Miss
Miss.
beating Michigan State in mind,
Hey,
so
credit to Ole Miss. They've put on a show. They kind
they've
of deserve
won two
it.
different ways too.
Yes.
They scored 90 and then they scored 70, two different ways. I don't really have any notes on Iowa State. You mentioned they were banged up, like we mentioned last week. Kind of ran into a team that was probably just as talented as them, just kind of had the better luck shooting the ball that day. To the quad that we got to see, and that's Marquette, New Mexico in the opener, and then Michigan State and Bryant. I'll start with the first game. I don't really have too much to say. Relatively kind of boring game, despite the fact it was close for pretty much the whole game. Marquette's best player, why can't I think of his last name? Cam Jordan
Jones.
Jones. Had an awful shooting night. Didn't really
Had
get
an
his
awful
touch.
everything night. Hold on. I don't want that dude was giving the ball away for fun. I was calling out the turnovers at one point. He's trying to drive it. I'm like, oh, here comes the turnover. And
Yeah.
sure enough,
Just
he was pathetic.
and he like didn't even like want the ball. It felt like at parts of the game down the stretch, it was really Joplin who was even like, as for being a three or four, whatever you want to call his position, was doing a lot of the ball handling, and it was kind of just iso ball with him down the stretch, and it just didn't work out. New Mexico, very complete team, obviously well coached by Pitino, and they just kind of outlasted them in the end. I just think they were a little more complete in what they were doing offensively, and Marquette ran out of gas just relying on one player.
Yeah, I guess the only takeaway before we get to Michigan State is has Shaka Smart won the tournament game since his BCU run?
Good question. I mean,
Oh,
so
he
I
has
was
to
looking
have.
at
Yes,
his
he has
stats.
to have because he was the coach at Marquette when we beat him 2 years ago, right?
Correct.
So he's won at least one, but
Yeah.
he's kind of a letdown himself.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I'm not saying this year specifically as a seven seed, that there was the highest of expectations, but this is a team that was a top 25 team in the country for most of the year. I was surprised, so I kind of looked up his like tree. Like where he's been. He was at Texas for like 6 years. So it was not like a relatively short stint, and I have no memories of him being there at all.
I remember Texas. I didn't know it was 6 years. He said maybe it's just the years blending together, but I know he was there. I just didn't realize it was that long, and I don't think he did anything there.
I want to say it was 2015. Let's see, before I give our fans some missing, watch it be like 2 years, and I'm just an idiot. Texas 2015 to 2021, and then
Jeez.
he's been at Marquette since 2021.
Yeah,
So,
well, bum.
to Michigan State 87, Bryant 62. Kind of like both of these games are just what Michigan's, we'll get into the second one, but are kind of just what Michigan State's done to everybody else since. And you came out and there were nerves. You weren't shooting the ball well. You didn't shoot the ball well at all from the free throw line. It kind of came back towards the end of the second game, but didn't shoot it well at all in the first game and for a good chunk of the second game. And I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but every single player on the roster since February 1st has at least an 8% decrease in their free throw shooting percentage besides Cohen Carr.
I have not seen that. That's a very interesting statistic.
Granted, all of them were mid to high 80s through
Yeah, no,
February.
we were a very good free throw shooting team to start the season. You're right. We've probably regressed down to average. I completely didn't know that. You are right. We were kind of having some nervy moments in the first 5, 10 minutes of that game where we're sitting there bricking front ends of one and ones. You've got two shots. You can only make half of. You can only make 50% of them. Bryant's kind of hitting some threes on you, and you're like, is the ghost of Middle Tennessee State coming by again? It wasn't the second half. The adrenaline ran out for Bryant, kind of as what happens with most 15 seeds. They just don't have the bodies to be able to contend with a Michigan State. They got tired. They got into foul trouble with one of their few big guys who was
Yeah.
supposed to be able to rebound a ball. And I said this to you sitting watching the game. I said this to friends afterwards. I genuinely don't think they had a defensive rebound in the second half. Every
Yeah.
single possession was either a basket straight away or an offensive rebound for us followed by a basket or two offensive rebounds followed by baskets. It was just It was insanity how dominant we were on the offensive glass. That kind of led to some open looks from the 3-point line with collapsed defenses. And that's what kind of allowed us to, I think, shoot over 40% from deep in that first game. And then we ended up using all of our makes in the first game and kind of gave ourselves a scare in the second until Jaden Akins woke up. But yeah, that's kind of, I guess the last thing I'll mention is Bryant poked the bear with the Cohen Carr tweet and it aged like milk. He was captain energy, captain. He was everywhere doing everything, dunking, layups, defense. It was in a very, very impressive performance from him, probably his best game at Michigan State. So that was awesome.
Definitely.
It just made it entertaining that it came from a Barstool Bryant tweet that says, "Oh, we're supposed to be scared of the 6'5" guy who only averages 7 points, and he put up a career high in the first half.
And Ole Miss has also poked the bear too. I would like to say they have the
I did
same
see that. I did see.
one. The second game, Michigan State 71, New Mexico 63. Again, more of just what they've done is down the stretch, New Mexico couldn't buy a basket. Early on, it looked like this team couldn't miss a basket. The inside, outside, specifically inside, Kohler was kind of getting worked on the defensive end. And like you said, the baskets weren't falling. They shot horrific from three until late down the stretch. Akins hit a couple big shots. Jason Richardson, who we've sung his praises, has really just been Mr. Consistent over 15 points every single game. I think he had 6 points, and they were all in the last like 4 or 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
And he had a nice little stretch to close out the game there, but just a gritty win. It would scare me more to win that way against a team that isn't as talented as you if it weren't the way that this team has won all season, in that they come out slow, they're a second half team, and when that stretch late in the game comes, 7, 8, even less than that, minutes left in the game, and you can't get a basket, and Michigan State's finding a way to get to the free throw line. They're finding ways to get in ones. They're not letting you get all second chances as far as offensive rebounds. That's going to beat a lot of teams, and that's exactly what they did to a New Mexico team that I wasn't. I was kind of like, New Mexico going into it. Like, how good can they be? And I looked at their. I know it's the Mountain West, which is
My punching bag.
your punching bag, but to go 18-2 and have a couple of Power Five wins, not just to, like, we're not talking Minnesota, legit Power Five wins. Ironic, I used Minnesota when their coach was there for a very long time before New Mexico. But anyways, great win, great cover, 7.5 points, and they got to 8 to finish a 6-0 day for me on Sunday in the gambling department. I guess thoughts on New Mexico. We can preview the Ole Miss game now and possibly beyond.
No, I have actually more thoughts on Michigan State. Jaden Akins finally played like the guy we said he needed to be at the beginning of the year. He was the leader of the team. He was one of the few guys who could kind of get his own stuff. And then secondly, shout out to Frankie Fiddler for that incredible down the stretch kind of performance. I kind of nicknamed him, and I don't know if I've said this before on the podcast or told people just in person, but he is kind of the ultimate opportunist, where if you told me that Frankie Fiddler is going to run some set play for me, I'd probably puke in my mouth because I don't think that's what he does. But he is so intelligent at making these backdoor cuts or finding a loose ball that's bobbling around when a play's broken down. He's so well positioned for jump balls and tips and random stuff that he's just an opportunist where when you think something's breaking down, that backdoor cut for the layup really comes to mind. Some of that other stuff. He kind of gave us that spark that we needed to pull away from New Mexico towards the end of that game.
And I'll sing his praises on the defensive side. As he, I was worried, and I think early on in the year, his lack of athleticism on how he could, how good he could be defensively. He looks very, and despite I don't think he's the best athlete at all, as you kind of alluded to, he has committed and he looks like he wants to play defense. He's willing to do what it takes defensively. Just another thing I've noticed with him down the stretch here. In kind of being very good in the specific role he has now. Anything else
No, you're
before
the
we...
guy who thinks we're going to lose to Ole Miss, so tell me why.
I shouldn't say I think I have them in my bracket. I just had Ole Miss as a team circled around all year, and that they have wins against the big dogs. They've played the big dogs. I know the SEC hasn't necessarily looked as big and bad in the tournament as it did all
Kind of
season.
has. They got half the field left.
The spread right now opened at 2.5. It's up to 3.5 for Michigan State. It's the smallest spread of any Sweet 16 game right now. I just think, and I'm traumatized by a Chris Beard and Michigan State matchup that happened in a Final Four about 6 years ago. I just think it's a veteran coach that in the moment this team isn't going to be afraid of, while the roster itself may not have been. I just get really worried with coaches that have been there and done that when you get this far in the tournament. I think this is where it actually really does matter. And it's not only a coach that's been there and done that, it's a team that's been through the waters as far as the SEC this season. They had big wins in right moments. I thought right off the hop they were underseeded as a five. And they are gonna have, it's gonna be the first time all tournament that they, you're gonna look at the other side and see better athletes than you. And you are going to have to win the Michigan State way. And I do worry about it. As a fan, I'm gonna have to say I think Michigan State will win. I think it's a troublesome matchup. Not actually, I actually haven't didn't like gone as deep of a dive as I did with the first round matchups yet, but that's my 1,000-eye take on this game.
Sure. I don't follow or haven't followed this Ole Miss team as much as you, so I can't give the in-depth breakdown, but I am going to hope that we were shaking rust off in these first two games and it was a little bit of overlooking opponents. And then they come out, they're shooting kind of like they did to end the year where it was better than the beginning of the season, and that they can kind of continue their push to either meeting Michigan in the Elite Eight or meeting the number one overall seed Auburn in the Elite Eight. I guess the only thing I can really say is I'll be on a plane going to Spain during this game, so I'm gonna have to get very, very creative on how I'm watching this. Hopefully Delta has their streaming quality level Wi-Fi up on this flight so that I can pull up a Stream East or something, because the option for live TV is just not gonna work on an international flight. So I'm gonna have to get very creative.
And I don't shy away from the Michigan State potential, since we won't talk about it for a while before it would have happened. I want it to happen. I know it's tough to beat a team three times in
We match
Michigan.
up so well with them.
I just don't see it. I'm sorry. I just don't see a way we lose to them. And I obviously I don't know if we could beat Auburn, but I know we can beat Michigan because it's happened twice.
I agree completely there. To
To the
that,
West.
nothing to talk about Florida. I guess actually there is one thing to talk about with Florida Norfolk State. That coach was right. They were not a 30-point underdog. They were a
Right.
26-point underdog. Show
Yep.
some respect on no Norfolk
Yep.
State, guys.
I thought it got down to 27.5, so they covered by 1 point.
Vegas always knows. But
Yep.
no, the UConn-Oklahoma game was fun. It was one of the few kind of close and semi-exciting games of the first round. UConn eventually kind of pulled away late with some free throws. They tied Duke, or the Duke team of 90, I think it's 91 to 93, with 12 straight tournament wins, or 13 straight tournament wins, the all-time record. So good for them there. And then they probably had the most entertaining game of the tournament against Florida,
Yeah.
where they came out, and I don't know if you want to say they were the better team, but they were in control of the game for 35 minutes, and they were able to kind of keep Florida at arm's length. And then is it Clayton or Clayden? What I forget his
The
name.
guard
Yeah, the
for
one who just
Florida.
yeah, the one who went nuclear,
Yeah.
who they pretty much bought from wherever they bought him. He started at Iona when
Yep.
UConn started their win streak 2 years ago, but he just was a menace hitting these crazy fadeaway threes, and at the
And
end.
he was awful for 35 minutes. Was
Yep.
my what I was going to add.
Yeah, I was just going to kind of get to the point where at the end, the talent prevailed for Florida, and the other thing that prevailed for UConn was their head coach being a little bit of a bitch. We talked about this last year where we were like, where I think I was a little on the side of, oh, he's passionate, he's kind of a freak, but that's kind of just what you're gonna get out of him. Leaving the court screaming, oh, I hope they don't fuck Baylor, like they just fucked us. It's like, dude, you're a grown adult. Like, let the kids do that kind of talking. You need to show a little bit of control over your program because you're just a man child. And that rubbed me the wrong way. I heard Valenti call him pretty much the basketball version of Jim Harbaugh, and I think it's the perfect comparison, where it's just a human being who doesn't know how to act, who is
I wouldn't put
incredibly
Jim
good at.
Harbaugh to that level. I think Dan Hurley is in a league of his own as far as this season in general.
Maybe, but I guess the point was incredibly good at their job, psychopath human being was where he
Yeah.
was drawing the parallels.
And Dan Hurley is gonna like, we're gonna excuse this behavior. He did a lot of crap this year that got complete, including yesterday or Sunday, that got completely excused. As he's an emotional guy, that's how he is as a coach, and he's gonna kind of get away with it for a lot longer than most people would because he won so quickly and so fast. And I don't want to like overreact to a season where they were still a tournament team, still won a game in the tournament, but is there a world where like you see that and what happened this year and God, it's not exactly the biggest net for NIL in general that like you could see this thing going and like guys aren't going to want to play for that to a certain extent. Like I could see it going spiraling so fast that it got so high so quickly that it could equally go the other way super quickly.
I don't see
Maybe
that.
it's an overreaction.
I think that's slight overreaction just because yes, he's a freak, but what guy wouldn't want to go play for the team that's put player after player in the league and Kling in the lottery, Stephon Castle in the lottery. You've got Liam McNeely, who's probably going to be a lottery pick. Is it Caravan, who's also a draft prospect? But he
Kind
puts
of played
guys
his
in the
way
league.
out of being a draft prospect this year, to be
Huh.
honest.
What'd you say?
Caravan, he was supposed to be like a lottery pick and kind of played his way out of one this year.
Okay. So, yeah, it's just I think with the pipeline that he has, and whether that's just kids that who he says, here's seven figures, come play for me for a year, I can put together a team that'll compete at the highest level. Let's see, either we can win a title, maybe we do, maybe we don't, then you can go off to the big to the pros. I don't know if it'll be like that, but I don't see it spiraling out of control, but I think maybe there does need to be a rethink of the system and kind of maybe not rethink the system, but finding the guys and the archetypes of the guys that he needs to run the offense the way he does. I mean, if you go back to last year, that UConn team was stupid.
Perfect.
That
Yeah.
they perfect actually might be the best word. That was as close to perfection that we've seen on a college team on both sides of the ball in ages. Just
Yeah.
the offense, the fluidity, the not quite the modern day NBA style basketball, but just the way they kind of almost ran a college version of the Warriors, where if you don't have the ball, you're running either at the basket or creating space for someone else, and you're just losing other guys and you're getting
At
hurt.
all five positions, too.
It was borderline perfect. So I just think that he needs to get back to the drawing board, maybe lose a little bit of the freak show cells and kind of bring himself back down to earth and kind of throw together another team that can, like you say, win more titles.
Yeah. The next little quad, the upset that wasn't really an upset that everyone predicted, even Vegas. Colorado State beat Memphis. I mean, it was an 8-point game on the score, but they were up by double figures most of that game. Maryland also spanked Grand Canyon. Not many notes from that one. And then you mentioned best game of the tournament. Probably gave us, I actually, full
He
disclosure, I
traveled.
had a total brain fart moment. For the MSU game on Sunday night, and that I saw 9:09 or 9:15 on the clock, and I didn't turn it on until we were like, "Oh, this Wisconsin game was going back and forth. Colorado State, great game. Colorado State was up for a large portion of the game. Maryland fought their way back. They're a good team. I said they were a good team. I love them. They're going to be a tough matchup against Florida. Oh, Florida's just got so many different big white
I
guys. They're
don't.
going to throw at Derek Queen."
I don't think Maryland's deep enough to handle Florida. As opposed to
Agree.
before we get to that though, I don't think there's anything really noteworthy to say on the first round matchups. Memphis is one of
No.
the stupidest teams I've ever seen play basketball. There's just no thought process. They just go out there and play. Obviously, Maryland killed Grand Canyon, and then the closest thing we had or I guess we did have a buzzer beater, but you
Yeah.
had Colorado State hitting the three to go up by one, and then you had Maryland with their kind of cheating ways of getting a freebie, where when you look at it from the top, you say, oh, you know what, that might be a gather step, but then you look at a side angle and they're just showing you traveling. Derek Lee like six steps, and if
I haven't seen that. I haven't
the
seen that.
more
I
I
was going
watch,
to compliment on how amazing it was, and it's
I
just
mean, it was a great shot, don't
talked
get me
about
wrong.
it
It's
because
just
it happened during the state game.
It was a great shot, don't get me wrong. It was a great finish, kind of falling away from the basket. But
On his left hand.
yeah, when you look at it from the top, you could I see the argument of, oh, it was a gather step, but then you look at it from kind of those little side angles and court views, and it's like there's no gathering. He's just running, making like he makes he made some NBA players proud with the amount of steps he took without getting a travel called.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way.
Okay. I hadn't seen that, like, or thought didn't think it live. I was just so amazed by it. The moment, obviously. I kind of agree. Florida's gonna outlast them because of the depth, like you said. But like Gillespie's gonna be able to guard Quayton, or however we say it that we were talking about. And then Florida's gonna have a ton of different options. I think they've got a ton of big guys. That shoot free throws well, that can get to the line, that are tough inside, and they can kind of do what Michigan State does to a lot of teams and throw a bunch of different big guys at you as far as Derek Queen, and one of them's going to stick and be successful. Anything else on that before we move on to the next pod?
No, this actually might be one of the most like boring quads there is to talk about. Drake beat
Yeah.
Missouri and wasn't much to say there. And Texas Tech pretty much handled UNC Wilmington for the majority. I think Wilmington made it close with a couple minutes to go, but then Tech just kind of pulled away again. And then that second round matchup was never really a contest.
Oh. No. And like we'll talk about them later. The matchup they have in the next round. What was deemed the quad of legends? I mean, kinda was okay. Kansas Arkansas was one of the better games of the first round. It kind of went back and forth for a while. Hunter Dickinson ends his legendary career at Kansas with a total of one tournament win. I like Arkansas is hot. We knew they were gonna have talented players. They didn't have a single player on the roster from last year. And I think Cale deserves, and say what you want about Patino and that St. John's team not really having the most challenging schedule, and were they really actually as good as their record? But I think a lot of credit deserves like to be had for Calipari this year. And he got pushed out of Kentucky, went in conference to another school, brought in an entire roster, struggled all like kind of had these ebbs and flows in a very tough conference, makes the tournament, and then makes it to the second weekend with a win over two legendary coaches and two very good programs.
I think actually, I don't know if maybe I'm thinking of Kentucky or Kent or Arkansas, but one of those teams became the first program ever to make a Sweet 16 with zero production returning from last year's team. I think it was Arkansas, but it could have been Kentucky just because I know both of those programs had so much change with the coaching moves, though. But that was kind of impressive. Flip side, St. John's. I don't love pulling your best player out. I understand he was very, very
Yeah.
old. But he is still your best player. He's the Big East Conference Player of the Year. And he might be cold, but your whole team was cold, and your whole team's been cold for the whole season. They couldn't
Right.
shoot. So I thought that was a little frustrating. I mean, we were watching in Cleveland, and there was that one kid who was at, he was kind of behind your back at the bar, who East Coast kid who was just saying, "Let's go, Johnnies." And like, I was really glad they lost because like his voice pissed me off. So that's all I can really say about that game.
I think he was 3 of 17 shoot. I saw the
Yes.
Patino clip today,
Yes.
3 of 17 when he took him out. I get taking him out for a stretch of it, but he didn't play, I want to say, 7 of the last 10 minutes and none of the last 5. Like, like why not even just like when you need free throws or need somebody to get to the line in the last 2 minutes, like go put him out there. I just agree with you on like it felt like he overcoached the moment a little bit there. And then he got to watch his son lose the next day too, so.
Yeah. With that matchup, give me Texas Tech. I think this is a team that has kind of gotten healthy with McMillan and Williams, and I
Yeah.
think that they will be too talented, maybe not too talented, I think they'll be too complete for this Arkansas team, which they're still kind of trying to get Boogie Flan back up to speed. They're still trying to get their kind of their ducks in a row, if you will, and give me Texas Tech in the Elite Eight to meet Florida, where I think some that could be a very, very fun matchup.
I agree. I actually think Texas Tech, the way they're playing right now, fully healthy, you kind of saw them inch their way into as down the stretch being a three seed, down the stretch being a very good or potential two seed, falling into that like 7-6 range for a while. I think they're playing good basketball. Arkansas is not going to be a pushover matchup with the way they play in the SEC as a 10 seed. But I agree with exactly what you said about Texas Tech.
Yeah. To the east.
To the east, Duke. And
The buzz saw. The buzz
one
saw.
seed that hasn't looked at all like they don't belong on the one seed line. And that's Duke. They've been probably the most dominant team in the tournament. The Mount St. Mary's game wasn't even close for a second. And then they beat a solid Baylor team with Jeremy Roach, who played for them for 3 years, and a number two or number three overall pick potentially in VJ Edgecombe. They're very complete. They looked like they learned to play without Flagg down the stretch there in the ACC tournament. Cooper Flagg is the best player in college basketball. I'm very glad this was my pick to win the national championship. They're going to meet some controversy eventually. Like Arizona is going to be a team that can run, and they've got firepower. Like if Caleb Love gets hot, you never know. But man, what a weekend for the Dukies.
Yeah, I don't see anyone beating this team until the Final Four, where you get other teams that are equally as deep. I can't even say as talented, because nobody's got three lottery picks, and one of them is dubbed as borderline generational. So I think at the end of the day, if you want to beat this Duke team, you're probably going to have to outcoach John Shire, which, there are some guys who might have the ability to do that,
Are you still out?
but when it comes to player versus player, you cannot compete with this team.
Yeah. That's really all I got for this one. I mean, Baylor, Mississippi State was a good game down the stretch. Mississippi State kind of stayed in that like 7-10 range and then made it close at the end.
Yeah, I was just really going to say, I feel like that scoreline lot was, well, maybe one of those that kind of lied a little bit, where it
A
seemed
little bit,
close,
yeah.
but I also don't think it was really a great game. It seemed a little choppy, ebbs and flows, and
Yeah.
just meh. I don't know.
I'll be honest, I didn't watch a single game in this next quad. But that's Oregon and Liberty, who had no problems with Liberty. Everyone thought Liberty sucked and they did. And then same thing with Akron, just a very tough matchup for them. Arizona ran them out of the gym and scored 95 points. And then in the next round, you had a Pac-12 rematch. I don't know
Pac-12
anything
after
that happened
dark.
this game.
Pac-12 after dark. It lived.
12, it was Big 12 After Dark. It was the latest game on Sunday night. Arizona kind of edged them out. I'm a little surprised to see this Arizona team where they were. I just didn't think they were consistent enough to put together a good weekend like this, but they proved me wrong and they can score on anybody.
It's the Caleb Love thing, where he can shoot you in or he can shoot you out of games.
Yeah.
And they can kind of go as he goes.
Anything to add on this quad? That's all I got. Like I
No, because
said,
I also
one of
didn't
the rare
watch this.
ones I didn't catch.
No, I was also like, you mentioned the first two games were ass, so you didn't even need to turn them on. And then we were all so mentally drained from that New Mexico game that it wasn't even worth turning on a basketball game after that at midnight.
Perhaps actually a fun little quad for me in
Yes.
terms of some storylines here and a team that I like. I actually think they're going to make a Final Four if they wouldn't play Duke in the Elite Eight, and that's BYU. They kind of handle a team, a tough VCU team. I know it was a single digit score, but I thought another game where it wasn't necessarily, I thought it BYU dominated. Wisconsin dominated Montana, not much to say there. And then a very, very fun BYU Wisconsin got exactly the matchup you wanted. Two teams that were going to score a lot of points, they did. 91-89, they both scored 90 points basically. And BYU just kind hit the last shot when they needed to.
Yeah, I think this is another one of those that was the scoreboard lies a little bit. I think BYU was always in control of that, and
Yeah, they
it
were
was,
winning the whole game.
yeah, it was more of just Wisconsin at the end was it's funny because I think teams when they're like desperate for points at the end of the game, they start jacking up threes. I always find it hilarious how they magically turn into Steph Curry and hit 80% of those shots. They can't do it during like the actual game when they're just like not forcing up contested jumpers and those are not going in.
Yeah. But Wisconsin kind of like, and that was like a, I thought this was going to be a good matchup from an offensive standpoint. You got it. Wisconsin, like you said, though, shot their way back into a game. And that's what the scouting report was. And they did it. BYU can score on anybody. It's just a matter of they're going to play two teams that can score the rock just as well as them in Alabama and Duke if they were to go on a long run here
Yep.
this weekend. The next quad, Vanderbilt, St. Mary's. St. Mary's kind of just, I don't have much to say about this one either.
No.
St. Mary's just played, let made Vanderbilt play their game a little too long. And then, I mean, Alabama perhaps had maybe the biggest scare of any of a 1 through 4 seed. Robert Morris was in that game for a lot of the
Yep.
game, and then Alabama, with about 7, 8 minutes left, kind of pulled away. Was double digit game most of this down the stretch at least. But the biggest scare, I guess. And then St. Mary's, I just don't think that style of basketball, when you are significantly less talented than the teams you play, like in Alabama and the SEC, was ever going to work. Like that, you can play that style and be dominant in the WCC and against the 10 seed. But when you have to play one of the most talented teams in the country, no matter what happens, St. Mary's is going to lose those types of games. And that's just what happened.
Yeah, I also think that you kind of bring a little bit of the Virginia paradox with Tony
Right.
Bennett, where it's like you can be very fundamentally sound, but if you play at a snail's pace, you're going to keep the other team in the game. And if the longer someone else stays in the game, either the more they believe or the luckier they can get with just some random Hail Mary or a couple quick flurry of three pointers, and suddenly you look around, you're down four, and you're like, well, it takes me 5 minutes to score 4 points. What am I supposed to do now? So you're right. I think it's a unique style of basketball. It works for the level of competition they have to play to consistently put them in tournament, but it kind of limits their abilities within the tournament once you, like you said, you play a team that has real players, real athletes, and real hoopers. For the Sweet 16, I'm actually going to pick against you. I think BYU and Alabama should be a very, very fun track meet, but I think that if you're going to try and go to a track meet with Alabama, they're going to win that because they invented the track meet in
Yeah.
the version of college basketball the last couple of years.
You kind of got four teams that want to play a track meet
Oh
in
yeah.
this.
You're right. Those should be very fun games. If I'm not mistaken, those are Thursday games, which is going to be
They are.
perfect. I'll actually be able to watch them before once again leaving for Spain.
Yeah, let's go to the Midwest.
Okay.
First quad, Houston dominates in the first round. Gonzaga also dominates Port Georgia. They just, I said it last week and I'll say it again. It's the big, I off the top of my head, it's the biggest discrepancy between a football and a basketball school. And on the other end, Houston Gonzaga was actually one of the more fun second round games. It was probably the toughest test, I think. Well, I guess you having to play the two-time national champion isn't always fun either, but from a matchup standpoint, it was clear this was the most under one of the most underseeded teams for me was Gonzaga. And the KenPom, I guess, never lies. They were like 13 in the KenPom and an 8 seed. Houston's very good. This is a team that can shoot the ball and like pass Houston teams. They're willing to kind of run, but they still have that Kelvin Sampson identity and what Houston has been the last 5 or 5 to 7 years. And to survive that game, I think is going to give them actually a ton of confidence in I love them against Purdue. I think they played their close game. I think Purdue's actually less talented than that Gonzaga team, and I actually think they're going to go on a little run after kind of getting their scare early on, or they're good, not necessarily scared, but good matchup early on.
Yeah, I thought this was once again a game that maybe wasn't reflected by the final scoreboard. I think Gonzaga just hit three pointers to always stay. Like, we were sitting at the hotel bar, kind of late, I think Saturday night, and it was just like every time Gonzaga brought it up to 10, 11, 12, it would just be like, oh yeah, here's a random Gonzaga three, just to let him hang around for a bit. And
Right.
so, it yes, it kind of came down at the end, and Houston did a little bit of kind of tomfoolery with the basketball just to kind of give Gonzaga one or two extra possessions, and that was good for you. It helped them cover, and that was massive because I knew you had made a rather large bet, but it worked out well. My national champion stayed in, and you won your money, so good little quadrant there.
Yeah. To another fairly
Nothing
interesting.
burger.
Yeah,
This might
I
have
was going
been
to
the
say,
one.
fairly interesting from a standpoint of it was the biggest upset of the tournament.
But it was an awful game, so that's why
It
it's
was an
like.
awful game. It was a great last minute in that Clemson decided that probably the worst half of shooting I've ever seen from a team. That's very dramatic, but have seen in a while from a team was Clemson in that first half of that game. I don't even think they had 20 points in the first half
No, they had
and
13.
13. Yep. And then they. In that last 90 seconds, decided they were going to hit like five threes and make this what was a double-digit game for 39 minutes, a two-point game in the end, and actually have a shot at the win at the end. But I guess McNeese, they get it done. Will Wade didn't affect them. They have Aura, who's going to go and follow him at NC State, maybe. I don't know. But the storyline. And this is where I like your tournament take is so true is like the storyline of that being the only upset. They were, first of all, they were only like a 6-point dog. Like it wasn't even like a crazy big upset for Vegas. And then they got absolutely pounded by Purdue. That game was never close. And then Purdue kind of got their easy 13 seed, 12 seed matchup. And looky here, they're in the Sweet 16 for the second year in a row.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add. Like I said, this was a quadrant of games that were never really competitive. And I guess the only thing I'll say is not only was that shooting poor from Clemson, the effort was abysmal. I think this was a game we were also watching together on Thursday where I kind of said, like, if I was a head coach, I probably would have killed my team if I saw that performance for 20 minutes. I just would have said, you guys, if you don't want to show up, if you don't want to play, that's all right. We've got probably a student manager. We've got some walk-ons. Maybe I'll give a jersey over to Aura and they can come out for the second half, because that first half was a disgrace to like to everything. It was pathetic.
Yeah. To the next quad, Illinois, Xavier. Illinois did exactly kind of what I thought they were gonna do in that they were gonna play a good game and look like gods on offense and then kind of just not get that shooting two nights in a row. Kentucky kind of dominates this quad, dominates Troy, and then not again another 9-point game that was in the double digits for most of that game or in the high single digits for most of that game. Kentucky, another team that can score with anybody. They shot the lights out of the ball for a good chunk of that game. And Illinois just kind of gave them gift after gift after gift in terms of turnovers. And I just, it's another year of Illinois being what Illinois is as a program, unfortunately. Frank Underwood
Hey,
is
they
a
made the Elite
serial.
Eight last year.
They made the Elite Eight last year. And I don't want to be too hard on a six seed, but this was a very talented team. You had Will Riley, a five star. Jakachonis was first team All Big Ten. And you just couldn't really ever get anything going down the stretch. I know they somehow made a Big Ten championship game in the tournament, but this is exactly what I thought Illinois would do. And they did. They just met a more talented version of themselves in Kentucky. And Kentucky, I don't know how you feel about them, but they could lose to this Tennessee team by 30, or they could beat them for a third straight time, I
Yeah,
think.
I'll just say a couple things. When the snow melts, the Illini melt, except
Oh,
for
yeah.
last year. The Kentucky team, I think the other thing that's maybe worth noting is it's a kind of one of those nice little things of it's okay to hit the reset button every once in a while. Just because a coach won you a title 13 years ago. You don't have to be beholden to him forever. And
Yeah.
that's actually not a Michigan State kind of analogy. I'm just trying to throw that out there because it worked out for Cal as well. Both teams are in the Sweet 16. It's Kentucky's first Sweet 16 since 2019, which is crazy to think about Kentucky basketball going 6 years between Sweet 16s. And then Cal as well. He showed up at Arkansas, built his team from or bought his team from the portal, built them from scratch, dealt with
Walmart
some
too.
injuries. Yeah, Walmart put the Waltons put some money out for him and said, please make us relevant again. Eric Musselman had a nice little run a couple of years ago, but we want to be consistently good. And both schools are in the Sweet 16. So that's kind of just another one of those, or one of those maybe refreshers in life that sometimes it is okay to reset, hit the reset button and just part ways mutually. It doesn't mean that there's bad feelings, even though there might have been with Cal and what kind of how it ended, but it is good to kind of see them back in the later rounds. And like you said, they've already beaten Tennessee twice. It is hard to beat a team, especially a good team, the third time in the season, much less a second. So that'll be going up against them, but they're going to have every right to think that they can beat them because they have. They know
They
they have.
have, and it's very, they match up well against that Tennessee team, to be honest.
Yep.
And you want to get into that quad?
Yeah, and what is there to get into?
Not really. Tennessee dominated it. They play this weird mix of they have. Why am I blanking on the little guard's name?
Tennessee.
Yeah.
Neiman, Nee, oh God. Oh,
No,
Siegler,
it's a simple
Siegler.
name.
Siegler, right?
Where? Yep.
Zakari or Zakai Ziegler, whatever.
Zakai. Yeah. Yep. They have Ziegler who can kind of get his bucket when he wants, and they have a couple of, these big wings who can shoot and score, but they're still a Rick Barnes identity team that can play defense. Which is why I think they do kind of match up well against Kentucky, is that like if Kentucky could just shoot the rock, good defense has no, like no say in those buckets falling. I have Kentucky Tennessee in my Final Four. I'll stick with it. I just think they're one the grittiest of those top SEC teams, while they're not the most talented of that group. And I'm still pretty confident in them. It's like you said, tough to beat a team three times.
Yeah, I'm also going to put Tennessee into the Elite Eight, but I do think Houston wallops Purdue, even though that game is in Indy. So, maybe some fans make a difference, but I think Houston beats Purdue. I think, like you said, they match up very well against a team that really is Braden Smith, Kaufman, Wren, and friends. Not really much else after that. And so, give me Houston in the Final Four. Give me Duke in the Final Four after beating Alabama in the Elite Eight. Give me Florida in the Final Four, even though I really, really want to choose Texas Tech. And then give me Auburn over MSU. And once again, I'm sticking with my chalk prediction of
I was
4-1
gonna say,
in the Final Four.
way to go out on a limb and take 4-1 seeds.
Hey, I did it to start. It's going on. You want to talk about some chalk? That's what the bracket was.
You want to hear mine? Because I'm gonna go
Sure.
the opposite of chalk. Give me Ole Miss, give me Texas Tech, give me Duke, and give me the Vols. I'm only
See,
gonna have
that's a
one
lot
seed.
more fun. I just don't think that's going to happen. I guess one of the other things that I wanted to talk about was you kind of mentioned it was the lack of interest. The average margin of victory was 17 points per game in the first round. That's abysmal. You mentioned that there was 0-13 seeds or better to win a game for only like the sixth time in 40 years. Only 2-12 seeds won, but one of them was favored, so I don't even
Yeah.
consider that an upset there. There was only one double-digit seed that made the second weekend, and it was the first time since 2007 that no 11 seed or worse made the second weekend.
It's an SEC school.
Yeah, and I would just say, like, what made the whole chalk argument even worse is, like I said, most of those first-round games sucked. They were blowouts or just not much, not enough of a blowout to be completely comfortable, but not ever close enough of a game for the people to worry. And I guess the lat then where I wanted to go with that is so many people have kind of tried to give their take on, oh, it's NIL that's ruining it. It's NIL. And it's like, I disagree with that. Yet last year we were doing this 12 months ago. Everyone said NIL was the greatest thing ever, and it's the leveling field. It just so happened that it was a bad tournament. Like, I don't like how whenever there is a small team that makes a run, we say, "Oh, dude, this is why this is the best thing. This NIL is here to stay, and it's great." And then now that no small team has made a turn, which it can happen. It's happened before. We've put 4-1 seeds in a Final Four before. We've had tournaments without deep runs by Cinderella. It happens once in a while. I don't think we can just lazily throw out, "Oh yeah, the NIL is the reason the mid-majors can't compete anymore."
I agree it's too small of a sample size to go that drastic, but it doesn't surprise me that this happened after the NIL and after these mid-major guys can go to big schools the year after and contribute right away. I agree it's too drastic of a take in that, like you said, it's happened before, and there have been tournaments where you've had top-heavy teams, like as recently as what was it, 2021, when the teams that were 1 and 2 all year played in the finals, and essentially as early as last year, Purdue and UConn were basically 1 and 2 all year and played in the finals.
Yeah,
So
no,
I
I
agree.
just, yeah, I think you summarized it perfectly. If we see 4 or 5 years out of 7 or 8, which are like this, sure, maybe we can start pushing the panic button. But the other thing is, people, it's like, well, NIL didn't help Cinderella. NIL helped St. John's become relevant. They got to
Right.
buy a team.
How is, yeah, a commuter
Arkansas got to
school
buy a
with.
team. Kentucky got to bring over Mark Pope flavor levels of players. Auburn's built through a portal. So I know that this is not exactly the, "Oh my God, this is killing the, this is kind of going against the killing the little guy argument." It's just, I probably should have stopped after St. John's, now that I'm sitting here thinking about it. But it's just, we need to see more, kind of more of a steep, kind of a sample size. And the other thing is, we've talked about how good these top teams have been all year. So this is not exactly a shock that most of them did not lose.
No, like we had this conversation last week about how chalk this bracket was going to be, how experts had this being chalk, and it just was. I mean, like you said, these things happen. Like, fortunately, like the sport is, there's still some predictability to the sport, and this is what was predicted going into this tournament, and that's what happened to
Can
a
I
lot
say
of.
one more thing? And I think this is maybe, as I'm sitting here thinking, a not fully thought out argument, but we still have to see the end of, like, if you throw 4-1 seeds in the Final Four, yeah, you can throw chalk, but if we get Ole Miss versus Michigan in one bracket and then a couple 4 seeds in an Arkansas in the other, we're not talking about chalk with a 10 seed in the Elite Eight.
No,
So
you're not.
yeah, we didn't have the 12 seed. How often is a 12 seed really playing the competitive games on a Saturday or Sunday in the Elite Eight? They're not. So I think it's
Here,
a little
here's my
as well.
counter to that, though, is how that will get remembered is to you and me, we'll remember that and remember that it wasn't necessarily chalk. But I think about just like the normal fan, they really only cares about the first weekend and can't even name you who was in the Final Four the year prior.
Yeah.
And that's what they go off of, is that first weekend or that even that first round sometimes where there's just the madness or of all the games and all the upsets happening, and that to them, it's already done. It already happened. This was a chalk year.
Agree. Agree. Anything
Um,
else?
yeah, I actually would like to change my pick to the Michigan State Spartans right now.
Yeah, we got him on board. We've got him on
Yeah.
side.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'll have to root against my bracket that went is only in the 50th percentile of brackets.
your bracket ain't making it very far, man. Just
Oh.
put it down.
And guess who I have winning it all? The number one team that anybody has, the Duke Blue Devils.
Yeah, so you're not winning any bracket pools. That's the one thing, I guess, as we're talking. I have Houston in my bracket, and I looked at the 3 different groups I'm in. I'm the only person who's picked Houston, and so it makes for a very low stress kind of effort for the tournament in terms of, oh, I don't have to beat myself up when a 7 seed beats a 10 and I put it the other way, because
Yeah.
either Houston's gonna win the title and I'm gonna win my bracket pools and money, or they're not gonna win the title and I'm not gonna win the bracket pools and I'm not gonna win money. So it makes it for very kind of low stress, low effort, just pay attention, and hopefully there's a Michigan State storm. Hopefully there's another Final Four.
Yeah.
You made it this far. Thank you very much. I will leave us off with Go Green.
Oh, what?